WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. You know, I haven't changed my screen behind me here. The last couple of weeks, we're about to move studios here. But Don Mohler is going to go anywhere I go, except over to Costas because he was too busy hanging out in New York on Broadway. By the way, I saw Tootsie a couple weeks ago at Hippodrome. So Broadway's back in Baltimore and in New York. All of our Baltimore Positive conversations, of course, brought to you by our friends at State Fair, El Guapo, the Beaumont. Last time we got together, I brought my wife a delicious mustard pork chop that we were dining on a couple days later. It's even more delicious. Don, how are you? I miss you. It's been a little while since we've gotten together, and we haven't reconned or anything, you know?
It has. I'm back from the New York adventure, and maybe that's, you know, up there doing the holiday thing. Maybe that's where we start with one of our favorite guests and a regular senior editor at Baltimore Magazine, Ron Cassie, and we're going to get in. We're going to talk about the December issue in a few minutes. One of the most in-depth and serious analyses I've read in a long time about an issue, a current events criminal justice issue. So it doesn't feel discordant. Before we do that, let's start with the fun stuff, because I'm not sure that's a fun article. Let's talk holidays, Ron. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Don. Great. Great to be here.
We've talked offline. I know you've got some great holiday memories or favorite things that you like to do both in Baltimore and around. What gets you excited about this time of the year?
Start with the ice rink in front of my house, Ron, even though I'm selling my place and it adds no value to me at this point, but it is lovely.
It is. I think it's great. You see a real diverse group of people. There's a line to get on the rink, right? It's packed. It should be bigger. I mean, it's busy. I played ice hockey as a kid, so.
Well, Ron, I mean, the biggest thing that's happened downtown that everybody should come and participate in some way is the skate park on Rash Field, where you would remember the carousel on the Key Highway side underneath the Federal Hill. You may remember festivals there, the City Fair, if you're old fart like me, or the volleyball. You know, a lot of volleyball there. It's also where the American Ninja Warrior set up. They built it. I wasn't there for the ribbon cutting, and my wife and I just turned the corner 3 weeks ago, and we're like, oh, my God, and how quickly it went up. So, I mean, Baltimore's coming back to life, bro. It really is. It's awesome to see it.
The skate park's fantastic, and we have a couple of professional skateboarders from Baltimore. I know you know Bucky Lasik. Joey Jett is another one who was on hand for the groundbreaking. It's exciting. It's like you see families over there, diverse group of kids, young adults, you know, from all parts of the city. It's fantastic. To go to Don's question and think about the holidays, one of my favorite things is to go up to Hamden, not just for the houses on 34th Street, but the dropping of the New Year's ball and the baby New Year celebration. Do you guys know about this?
No, but I need to learn about this, because I learned something. I did the show with Costas, and Aaron Tamarchio and Damian were on, and they told me about this Bethlehem Steel lighting tree thing. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, my dad worked there 27 years. I'm from Dundalk. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about Dundalk. How can this exist and I don't know about it? So, like, Don and I, last week, we were at the Beaumont. There's a tree there. That my wife is mad at me because we missed the downtown tree thing. So, any new tradition we can bring into, I want to hear this.
Is the Bethlehem Star made out of steel is tremendous at Sparrow's Point. And they replicate over at Trade Point.
Don, do you know about this?
Oh, the Star, I got to it. Attend when it.
Come on, man! How do I not know about this?
Absolutely, it was one of the things I was extremely proud of, having been a small part of the.
I was embarrassed, like Don. I didn't want to say to Aaron, "What is it?" But I'm going to say to you, like, what is it? I don't know what it is. The Bethlehem Steel thing. What is it?
It's an enormous steel star with light bulbs on it. Enormous. I don't know how much. It must weigh 500 pounds or something. It's gigantic.
Constructed by the steel workers.
And it was placed way up on top. Not the blast furnace, but way up on the side of one of the the buildings over there at the old plant, one of the big buildings.
Was it up when I was a kid? Was it up in the 70s and 80s?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. I may have a familiarity with it now that you're mentioning it, but well, I don't know anything about it.
You would have to go to the plant to see a light. But the great thing about going to the event, like I'm sure Don would know, is there's generations of steelworker families that would show up. You'd have kids there, but you'd also have the grandfather or grandmother there. So it'd be generations celebrating, hot chocolate, things like that. Really, really.
All right, next year, I mean, I may like make a crab cake tour of a Christmas lighting tour or something.
You need to get a special tour with Aaron Tamarkio and have him give you all of the history.
Well, Ron, yours is the better one because I haven't missed it yet. So yours is like a New Year's thing, right?
In Hamden, right? We all know the miracle of 34th Street with the houses. But if you go at midnight or get there about 11:30 on New Year's Eve, there's a telephone pole in front of Bob Hosier's house. And Bob, I believe, is a project manager at the port. He's probably 60 maybe now. He's in his early 60s now. Big, burly, Hersuit, is that how you pronounce that word, guy?
Santa Clausian?
Shaped, yeah. He's not that old, but yes. The in front of his house, which is really decorated, like he's one of the over the top, right? And there's a countdown, a ball drops from the street light down, and there's some fireworks that go off, and the ball's lit up, just like the New York, on Times Square in New York. And the ball slowly drops, and Bob emerges from his row house in diapers with a cigar, a bonnet, big body. And he's Baby New Year, and people sing songs, and there's music.
Who's Dick Clark? Can I ask?
And the street is packed. Now you can imagine the people are in a celebratory mood. Let's put it that way. By midnight on New Year's Eve, the street is packed. It's always freezing cold, and nobody cares. And it's packed. And he walks through the crowd and poses for pictures, and people sing songs to him. And it's a scene like, I mean, I made a video of it.
Is anyone sober?
No.
Okay, just asking.
I will say this. When I went as a reporter, I was sober. I was in Bob's house. And, you know, it's cold out, and he's going to be basically naked with a diaper on. He's knocking back some shots of bourbon before he does this. And his family's there. They have a huge spread of food. It's like bigger than Christmas in his house. And then there's the countdown and the ball drops and people are cheering wildly.
I love this city.
He emerges from the row house door and the people just explode into applause. I mean, it's like, if, you know, Frank Sinatra had showed up on New Year's Eve. He's greeted like the biggest celebrity in the world and poses for pictures, cigar, the bonnet. A very great guy, fun guy, great Baltimorean.
Well, I have to ask you, I have to, because I loved your book, and actually I'm going a little bit of promotion for those folks out there who are running around last minute Christmas shopping. If you want to get a book that anyone from Baltimore will love, pick up Ron Cassie's book. If you love Baltimore, it will love you back. You'll read it quickly. You will smile from beginning to end. It is just spectacular book. If you love Baltimore, it will love you back. Pick it up wherever you get your books. Now, I have to ask you, Ron.
And that story's in there.
I was just going to ask you. It's weird. I don't recall. And I read that book. I guess my mind is going. But that had to make the book, right?
It did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he, right before the door opens, he kisses his wife. There's fireworks going. He's this big, he's got to be 240-pound, burly guy, hairy body with the diaper, the bonnet, big smile. And of course, the whole spirit of Christmas up in hand on 34th Street is fantastic. I mean, the New York Times, I think, has written about it and stuff like that.
Well, Nestor, that sounds like a bucket list event for you and Jen. I mean, come on.
It sounds cold. And hold on. Stop everything. Okay. I live at the harbor. It's our last year here. I think we might not be closing into next year, so we might actually be here on New Year's Eve, right? Which would be nice, but we look out the window every year, and they usually do fireworks, do all that down here, and I don't think they're doing it this year. No. They're not. And here's what. It's cold. And like, at 11 o'clock, I look out the window and say, It's cold, and we rarely participate. But we always do the tree lighting up in Mount Vernon, and we missed that this year because Dundalk was busy losing the state championship. Ron Cassie's here from Baltimore Magazine. Don Moeller is here. Don will be holding up the Baltimore Magazine because Mike Teitelbaum asked him to do so. We appreciate that. I saw Mike out the other night. Yeah, Ron, for the city and for the holidays and getting out shopping and doing other stuff, there's all sorts of like things that happen here that we didn't have last year, right? And for me this year, getting out and seeing parties, people doing things, I would think even for the magazine to be out and doing stuff, this is sort of a breath of fresh air for the holidays. I mean, out in front of my place, this German village has been packed. Don, you said Broadway, people want to go out and do things right now.
Oh, it was New York. New York was packed. We visited, and you and I know are going to talk about it later on the recon. We visited the Winter Village, the Bank of America Winter Village at Bryant Park in New York. It was just spectacular. I felt that I was like in Miracle on 34th Street. So I think you're right, Nestor. Restaurants were packed. Theaters were packed. It was really remarkable. So it is an exciting time. And in the midst of all this, Ron, in December, what I'm going to call the ROFO issue, near and dear to Nestor's heart, Nestor, ROFO on the cover of the December issue.
I got ROFO in my cup right here.
There you go. It's on the cover. But in the ROFO issue, in the December issue, Ron, you write one of the most compelling articles that I have read in a long time, and Nestor makes fun of my little stickies and what have you.
Always but a school teacher, always.
This article that you wrote on the prosecution of Keith Davis Jr., it was a page turner. I think I said to you, get with Simon, get with your buddies. You know, David's always looking for the next HBO project. This has to be it. Ron Cassie, executive producer. Nestor and I are going to shut up, which is hard for us to do, and ask you sort of lay out the Keith Davis story for our listeners and from soup to nuts and why it is such a compelling story.
There's a lot to unpack. Keith Davis Jr. is the first person shot by Baltimore police after the death of Freddie Gray, right? After Freddie Gray is arrested and dies from injuries in custody. He is chased by police. There's a cab driver, an illegal cab driver, a hack in Baltimore parlance, basically gets involved in a minor car crash. He jumps out. There's actually already police at the scene. It's about a block and a half from the Northwestern Police District office. Cab driver jumps out and says, there's a guy in my cab with a gun. Police believe they're chasing this guy, but by all accounts, they end up chasing, going past a convenience store and somebody yells gun, and they end up chasing Keith Davis Jr. into a garage. He ducks into an open garage to hide out.
Who ran because he heard gun, right?
He heard gun, saw police, right? Now, to be clear, just to set this up, the cab driver in two photo arrays that day and in court says this is not the guy. He describes a completely different guy, older guy, braided hair, different clothes, all everything than Keith Davis, and testifies that in court that's not the guy. But police chase him into this garage where he ducks behind a refrigerator. You know, it's not much bigger than a two-car suburban garage, really. And police fire more than 30 rounds of shots at him and nearly kill him. I believe that the police think they were chasing the guy who robbed him with a gun. But, you know, as we pointed out, the cab driver says this was not the guy. The story starts. Keith Davis Jr. is, you know, in tears, fearing for his life, calls his girlfriend on the cell phone while police are firing at him, unloading weapons at him, and says, I'm going to die, baby. I'm going to die. And, you know, he's later rushed to the hospital. What happens is he's charged with this armed robbery. you know, he survived. They don't think he will survive, but he survived. He's charged with this armed robbery. He's charged with discharging a weapon at police, with carrying and transporting a weapon. He's charged with a ton of you know, these are like assaulting a police officer, discharging a weapon. He's acquitted on like 50, they dropped the charges of actually firing a weapon at police officers because there is a gun police say they recover there, but their own ballistics person says this gun has never been fired before. So the prosecutors dropped this charge of discharging a weapon. He's acquitted on possessing a weapon. He's charged kind of on a technicality of being near a gun, which is the gun that police say they found there that was never fired that day. That Keith Davis Jr. and his defense attorneys put forth was planted there to cover up this shooting because they shot the wrong guy. I mean, the cab driver says they shot the wrong guy. After he's acquitted on all these charges, a week later or so, he's charged with the seemingly unrelated murder of a Pimlico security guard 5 hours earlier that day. And the police claim the gun that they found there was a gun used to murder Kevin Jones, a Pimlico security guard. And that becomes this ongoing trial that 6.5 years later continues to today. Prosecutors have tried Keith Davis Jr. 4 times in the murder of Kevin Jones, a Pimlico security guard, who was shot 11 times. By all indications, looks like a targeted shooting at 4:50 in the morning on the Pimlico grounds as he's walking to work. He's been tried 4 times without them able to sustain a conviction. In the first trial, 11 of 12 jury members voted to acquit. The trials just get more convoluted. And I hope people do go to BaltimoreMagazine.com and read .net and read the story. Every time the trials get more convoluted, the prosecution, they introduce, at the second trial, they introduce a jailhouse snitch who's later discredited, a professional jailhouse snitch, who's by his cellmates sworn affidavits testifies that he has never met Keith Davis Jr. This guy is a drug enforcer for a Texas cartel. And it's amazing because police and prosecutors have to know. I mean, the prosecutors have to know that this guy is lying on the stand that he has met Keith Davis. It's quickly proven by the defense with the help of Ivan Bates, the defense attorney, that he's lying. At the third trial, they accidentally, surveillance video of a man following following Kevin Jones at Pimlico. There's a man on a surveillance video pulling down a mask shortly following him, who likely is the suspect in the crime. That video was withheld by police for years. I mean, it's not introduced to the third trial. And the detective says, because it has no evidentiary value. Then it's suddenly introduced, and now police and prosecutors are claiming the guy in the video is Keith Davis Jr., even though it's impossible to tell who the guy in the video is and actually does not really physically resemble Keith.
Ron, have you seen the video?
Yeah, I've seen the video. And it appears to be a bulkier man. I mean, but it's not identifiable. We've got to say that. It's grainy. It's from across the street. You wouldn't be able to tell who it was, really. I mean, it would fit anybody between probably 5'9" and 6 feet tall and, you know, 100, and I would say probably 170 to 195 pounds. I mean, it fits millions of people. It just gets crazier and crazier. This prosecution continues there's massive discrepancies. The civilian review board that looked at it found that all four police who had shot at Keith Davis Jr. in the garage, none of their testimonies were credible. Two of them should be terminated. Two should be at least suspended. One actually resigned because she was under federal drug investigation, it turned out, at the time. And yet the city state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, continues to prosecute this case. The more people read the story, I've told this to everybody, a lot of people ask me about this story. The more you dig into the story, the worse it gets. I mean, whatever you read on the page that we, that I've written, and it's worse the more you go into the weeds. I don't know really how else to put that.
Well, and again, I do the same thing. I encourage everyone to either go online, BaltimoreMagazine.net, or still pick up the December issue if it's still out there on the stands. There are parts of it I had to read several times because it was so compelling. And a couple of key points that I want you to help us with. One is, I imagine our listeners are saying, wait a minute, they've tried the guy four times. They're getting ready to try him for a fifth time. I didn't think you could try somebody more than once right. for the same crime. Help our listeners understand that.
Yeah. So first, real quickly, there was a hearing just a couple days ago, and the state's attorney offered a plea deal to Keith Davis Jr., which they've offered before. And they've come all the way down to from offering guilty pleas to Alford pleas, which is where, like, you don't have to admit your guilt in court, but you admit they have enough evidence. They've had previously said they wanted a 50-year sentence with all but 30 years suspended. Now they're all the way down to all but 15 years suspended. So, you know, it's a really obviously shaky case, or you wouldn't be going to court for the fifth time. If there is not an acquittal, you can keep prosecuting the same crime. So the very first, he's acquitted on 15 of the 16 charges related to the armed robbery. They can't charge him with armed robbery again. The first murder trial, he's 11 of 12 jurors vote to acquit. A juror wrote a letter to the defense team about that. And so they're able to keep doing because there's no acquittal. They've had twice they've gotten convictions that were overturned, right? So that's one of those is because of this horrific episode around this jailhouse snitch. That I can't believe people haven't been charged with misconduct around that. But it's akin, right, to, as one lawyer put it, you know, a football team scores a touchdown. It's called back because of a penalty on the offense. That's not a conviction, right? That's not a touchdown. That's not a conviction. So that's why you can keep taking bites of the apple. And to be clear, it gets more likely that somebody will be convicted. I mean, the juries are going to believe the state is coming forth for a reason. And the prosecutors can keep honing down their argument, right? They can keep, I mean, whatever you try, the more times you try, you're more likely to succeed. So,
all right, Ron, I want to, that's where I wanted to jump in. And I'm watching Nestor, and I can see the wheels turn. Nestor's like going, what in the world is happening in our
Show me the money on it. You know, like, right. what's the point? I mean, this guy have a lot of priors.
No, he had one nonviolent felony. He had not had one. He had a nonviolent felony drug conviction. No gun charges or anything.
So what's in this to go after a guy who might be innocent?
You're getting to the crux of my main question, and that is, here's the head scratcher for me, Ron, and you need to help Nestor, me, and our listeners sort it out.
Yeah.
Marilyn Mosby certainly is not known as a lock 'em up, throw away the key state's attorney. If anything, she's seen as one of the new breed state's attorney.
That let the criminals run wild, right?
For better or worse, right. Takes a much softer view to criminal prosecution. Why this case and Marilyn Mosby being so adamant that there's a disconnect for me that I'm having trouble put together. What have you been able to discern about that?
Well, I'd like to just step back from that for a moment, because there's a lot of issues that this case raises, right? And one is just to think of the context of when this happens. This happens immediately after Freddie Gray. This happens June 2015. And there's another case, the last person shot before Freddie Gray by police was also charged with having a gun, and he was shot by police, and he was acquitted of having a gun as well. So in some sense, this is not an unusual case with Keith Davis. Police officers rarely, if ever, get charged in cases like this with a wrongful, and they were, and Marilyn Mosby said she was not going to charge him even before they were officially interviewed about the case. This is 2015, Don. This is not today when this case began. We want to be clear about that. These circumstances are much different. And nobody at the time really wanted to see, the state's attorney's office or the police force wanted to see, an unjustified killing of a black man, which, given the all the context in the country and Freddie Gray here, I mean, the riots had just ended, right? So the uprising had just ended. So that's where this happens. And the fact is, Marilyn Mosby with Freddie Gray and with DeJuan Hawkins, who's the guy shot by police before, and in subsequent times since, and with Keith Davis Jr., has bought the state. The prosecutors go along with the police version of events. That's what they're believing is the police. They're not questioning the police version of events, right? About this gun allegedly found near Keith Davis Jr., about the, I mean, why are they even taking him to trial on the armed robbery charge? The cab driver says this, the hack says this is not the guy, right? So they're going all along with the police version of events. So that what you're talking about today, not prosecuting.
Are they calling the cabbie a liar?
No.
I mean, don't cell phones like show location and stuff in a lot of cases?
Well, we could get to that. I think Don wants to get to that, but the stuff about Marilyn Mosby being a quote unquote progressive prosecutor about not prosecuting drug possession charges and sex workers is an utterly different story than this. And it also comes much later. This is all very recent. It's not at the time.
Let me call a timeout here real quick, yeah. And we're going to do another segment because these tend to get a little longer. Don Moeller's here. Ron Cassie's here. Hold up the Baltimore Magazine, Don. Please do that for everyone so they can see what's going on here.
Rofo on the cover.
Compelling local post-Freddie Gray story. We're in the middle of it. I still have plenty of questions. I'm Nestor. We are Baltimore Positive, WNST, AM 1570. Stay with us. More with Ron Cassie right after this.